Welcome to Blind Shovel, an arts and music podcast. Today I speak with oil painter Dan Bunn. Hope you enjoy.
What's up?
How you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing, Michael?
All good. Can't complain.
Hell yeah.
So where are you at? You still in Brooklyn?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I'm out here, Brooklyn, New York. We're just jumping into this, right?
We're just right in there.
There we go. Hell yeah. Okay.
I'm trying to remember that, like, I feel like the last time we physically ran into each other, you were about to go back to school for painting. Am I making that up? Is that a false memory?
Oh, my. It's possible. Yeah, I think I saw you last right when I got to New York. I think I saw you out here.
Yeah.
Maybe exactly. Once or twice. Yeah.
And so did you go back to school and then kind of transition to this more photorealistic oil painting mode? Am I misremembering? Like, beforehand, you weren't making work like that, right?
You know, it's been a process. It's been a process. I basically came out here and studied at this place called Grand Central Atelier. Mm-hmm. It's sort of this, like, super technical painting school, and I somehow found out about it and ended up actually going. So, yeah. Before that, I definitely was making like various types of paintings and like other types of artwork and stuff. But I think kind of coming here and going through that whole process, it's sort of almost like an apprenticeship program. Yeah. It kind of set me on like a different path, which has been like pretty cool.
Well, you did some graffiti, right?
Yes, sir. Did a little graffiti here or there.
So you've done it's quite a contrast from what you're doing now. I'm kind of curious the difference between making that kind of work and this kind of work and how that feels day to day.
Yeah. You know, I think it kind of takes me back to just like being a kid and like making stuff and kind of just following kind of what I'm interested in. And over time, you kind of like exploring different stuff, but I don't know specifically, like, what do you mean? Like,
well,
are those two related, or
their process is so completely different, right? I feel like one is, I don't know. It depends how you do graffiti, but obviously I would assume it's a little more sneaky and athletic and clandestine. Oh, yeah. And it's not as rigorous or disciplined. There's different types of people who are attracted to it. I don't think it's the kinds of people, so
yeah, you know. No. That's cool. No, it's funny that we're like jumping right into this, but yeah, I don't know. I think they're different, but in my brain, it all makes sense. They're like not that different, but mm-hmm. it's definitely kind of different crowds of people overall. But there's sort of some funny overlap. But yeah, I think as far as graffiti goes, it's kind of this weird sort of like art sport kind of like secret activity that mm-hmm. kind of attracts like all sorts of different people for a variety of reasons. And sometimes you find it and sometimes it finds you. And I think the oil painting is obviously like a little more straightforward, but in terms of just like, it's like almost like what people think art could be, like realism and sort of like classical art or something.
Yeah, it's definitely more traditional in that sense. If you showed it to someone's parents, they would say, wow, that guy is definitely making art. But if you show graffiti to some people, they'll be like, that's not art, that's just vandalism. So they're they're quite different modes, but my interest is the process and how that reflects your life, you know, because they mean different things. Like, I don't believe you could probably invert the, like, it's, you probably couldn't make the work you made then now, and vice versa. You know, there's different stages in your life, and you're attracted to different things for various reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good point. I'm trying to think how would I explain this? You know, I think if we're talking about graffiti, and I guess I kind of knew you, like we hung out a few times, maybe in Oakland in mm-hmm. the Bay.
Yeah.
I think something that's funny about that is, like, in my mind, like, some of the kind of stuff I was into was like going and like finding spots with people, and we'd be kind of like going to all the randomest places and trying to find like waterways or kind of like abandoned places or things like that. And when I started doing oil painting, I sort of was doing a lot of landscape painting and like location sketching. So in this sort of funny way in my brain, I was like, yo, this is like the same thing, because I was thinking about like graffiti and exploring and like what part of that I like. And I like, there's many different aspects of it, and I think all of them are pretty cool in their own way, or, you know, some of them anyway. But one part that at a certain point I started realizing, like, I just like being outside at night, or like I like biking around in the city when like no one's around, and you're just seeing a different kind of reality, or you're running into different people, or you're having things happen like that. And when I was like location sketching, it would almost have this weird parallel where I'm like trying to find an interesting spot, but maybe instead of looking for a thing we're going to go paint on, I'd be looking for like a interesting view or something like that.
Or no, like, yeah, that makes sense.
A set of shapes or a set of light that I was attracted to. So I think, you know, what this actually hits on is that one thing that I find super fascinating is like the way people view what you do versus what it means to you doing it.
Sure.
Because I think those don't always like add up. And so it's cool to see. So like when I was doing some of these like landscape paintings, it was sort of like right when I started oil painting, which was, I guess, like 10 years ago now. I would basically just be like trying to find like an interesting spot to go paint. So I'm looking for like interesting light or like some cool house or building or something like that. And I'm just making my paint. I have my reason for why I picked it and all this stuff. And then like when I would show it to people, I'd see kind of their reaction to it or like what they associated it with. And I would be like, oh man, like that's not what I meant. Like I wasn't trying to do that. And cause it was almost like they were looking at the thing and seeing like grassy hill with sunlight. And I was looking at the thing and seeing like, you know, like, I don't know, like crazy experience that happened in this area, or, oh, I really like this street because of X, Y, or Z. And that's why I painted here. And so I started asking myself, like, is the thing that I'm doing like adding up with what people are seeing? And so I sort of started making more almost like imagined scenes where I was like, yo, I want to be like a figurative painter. And I would have these ideas in my head of like a whole kind of narrative or just some sort of thought that I was trying to express in the painting. And so some of those included like landscape elements. But I think as I was doing that, I started running into like technical difficulties where I think I was like giving it my best effort, kind of trying to figure it out on my own. Or like I was going to a ton of like figure drawing groups, like in the Bay, there's a ton of these like drop-in groups. And, you know, I think you can find them basically wherever you are, but for whatever reason, there was like a above average amount of those sessions happening. So I would go to all those and I was trying to do my paintings. I'm doing these like landscape sketches and, you know, still painting some graffiti here and there just for fun type of thing. But when it came to the oil painting, I was sort of like, shit, like it's not like the level that I would like to be at. And that was when I sort of started seeking out other stuff and found kind of how to really break down what the process is and looking more at history, going to museums more, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm kind of just rambling. But yeah, does that make sense at all?
Yeah. I mean, I think the desire to have a more one-to-one connection with the viewer can often increase with age and maturation, I think. Not necessarily, but I've noticed a trend in that for me where my work was much more obscure in some ways when I was younger, and I was comfortable with that, but maybe I was more comfortable with hiding. And then But as I get older and, you know, death, I'm only 35, but death, you know, death is death. So I think you start to be like, there's less time and I want to be more concise with what I'm putting out there and have people connect with it. I think there's pros and cons with it, though. I think
for sure
you can depict mystery within a work. And the person can receive that mystery or that openness. And that's a that's a good objective. I'm not particularly fond of what I would call propaganda work, where it's telling you how to think and it's visually depicting that thing. But but I don't think that's what we're talking about. I think we're just talking about a more objective metric by which you communicate. And you know,
well, you know, well, now that I'm like explaining this to you, I'm thinking like, you know, I actually, it's something that I'm actually dealing with my work right now, is just having taking that time to kind of have some introspection of like, what am I actually communicating? Because I think something that can happen with art, and it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's like, if you're doing this kind of like personal project, it's easy to like only think about like, oh, this would be cool to put in the painting. Oh, this would be cool to put in the painting. And like, I've got this, you know, I've got these like goggles. I'm going to put the goggles in the painting. I've got like blah, 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 whatever it may be. And to, and that can actually create an interesting result. But I think sometimes, or what the question I've been starting to ask myself a little bit is like, when it's all said and done and the piece is like out in the world. And, you know, if you like, I don't know if you've ever done this, but if you like go to a show and you see people looking at it and they don't know you made it and you hear them like talking about it or something, I'm like, what did they actually get from the thing? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it could be a little slippery slope where you could turn into like, oh, do I have to like what you're saying, where you're almost making like an illustrative thing. Like you're like planning, well, I want them to have this reaction. And so it could go in a funny direction if you took it the wrong way. But at the same time, I think it's good to at least consider like, well, what is it actually communicating? You know, I would say especially for sort of the kind of the community that I've kind of been part of for the last bit, I think a lot of people or a lot of my peers and kind of mentors are pursuing just like a technical skill and sort of like a revival of some of these like older practices of art making. And I think it can be such a challenging task to kind of like hold yourself to the standards of like the kind of like 5 or 10 people who have kind of like defied time and they're like the masters that everyone remembers. It can be like kind of daunting to compare yourself to that. And so it results in the sort of like continual quest to like go deeper within that route, and even to not even to compare yourself to the masters of the past, but even if we're talking about realism, almost like compare yourself to actual, like the organic world, like just compare yourself to the actual physical item that you're painting. So it's not even like we're comparing it to a photo. Like if I'm painting a picture of a skull that I'm right now, and it's like, I'm not competing with a photo of the skull. I'm actually like trying to like manifest the actual skull in the painting. And that can be so daunting that it sometimes that just becomes like almost like the subject of the work or the person's like life almost is like, that's what you're trying to do. And I think the question I'm sort of asking that I kind of have asked before, but I'm kind of coming back to now, is this question of like when the painting's done and I set it aside, like, what is it actually communicating? Mm. Does that make sense?
Of course. Yeah. And I applaud your effort to even try to do this, because I think many artists, myself potentially included, when you're in high school, you're seeking something of this nature, a type of photorealism, a type of technical mastery that allows you to explore. And then you hit a ceiling and then you say, well, one, this work isn't being perceived as cool, quote unquote. And two, it's incredibly difficult. And three, the Renaissance exists and it was glorious and nearly perfect in its aim. And so you kind of get to this place where you're saying, why would I make this kind of work? And I think the answers are obviously varied. And I think obviously you're exploring that, which is really cool. But I also think, you know, given the time span in which you've been practicing in this particular mode, you've progressed very quickly, I would say.
Word. Yo, thank you. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a process, but yeah, it's like, I think like what you're saying about like the Renaissance already happened. Like I just saw someone online who I like follow online who's talking about this, and they're like, they do more like pop art or something. And they had something about like, the Dutch masters are dead. Like, you have to live now and do what you do now, you know? And like, you can, I think like, I understand why someone would kind of feel that way about it, and it's totally valid. But at the same time, like, I think it's, I mean, like for me, I kind of look at some of the old paintings and I'm like, holy shit, like how'd they do that? That's so cool. And like, I just want to figure it out. But yeah, there is like a degree of, on one hand, there's a degree of futility because they reach a really high level. Even if you look at, it's almost like looking at the pyramids or something. Like if you look at some of the metal workers at the same time that we're talking about like Dutch painting, if you look at kind of like the guild system, I'm actually like a huge fan of like really just craft, I guess. So like the goldsmithing guild in the Netherlands, like at the same time as all the Dutch painters, they were doing like incredible stuff that I would probably say is like unparalleled now as well. And I don't know, it's cool to, I think it's cool to investigate, but it's like different things are going to attract different people, you know?
Yeah. I'm kind of curious to hear more about this community, because at least when I went to school in Philadelphia, actually, there was one school that was very concerned with this kind of depiction, which I believe was PAFA, but I went to UArts.
Yeah. Okay, and yeah. What was that like?
Well, I went for illustration, but switching to painting at the end there, and there wasn't a single soul making paintings in this way, you know, and the painting.
Oh, like realism?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, painting was just a word that meant make whatever you want within the fine art department. It wasn't about painting. And there was some amazing people who were like 90 years old who knew how to do anything technically with oil. And oftentimes what's funny is they had nothing really to express. So they had the opposite problem where they were deep technicians, but when it came to making a compelling image, there wasn't really much there. Sometimes you see that in musicians where they can play anything, but in terms of originality or the expression of themselves, there's nothing there. So basically I'm kind of curious what types of processes attract different people, because ultimately, although humans are quite varied, I think something that requires this level of discipline and study is pretty specific, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't claim to be like the authority on all this, but, and it's like, you know, I think one thing is like no group of people is like a monolith. Like there's, you're going to find different motivations and everyone has kind of like a different experience. I think what's funny about kind of the spot that I'm in, I went to school there and I actually teach there now. And what's interesting is like the glue is kind of that you're taking a bunch of random people, and the reason we're there is because we wanted to learn the same thing, but there may be a huge variety of experiences outside of that, you know, but,
right. You want to learn the same technical process, but you end up in different places, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And would the technical process be related to oil painting specifically?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And I would say, okay, I think it kind of attracts overall like two groups of people. There's kind of one group of people who's probably like wants to kind of, or there's going to be overlap between these, but one group maybe wants to kind of get a type of instruction that just like didn't exist for the last maybe like 70 years, but before, well, 70 to 100 years. And then before that, it was like the only education that existed.
Yeah. It's very, kind of very weird. Yeah.
And so some people just want that. They want kind of help. They want instruction. They maybe want people to show them a process that they can use in their own stuff. And this, and there, I think, yeah, maybe another group that I would say is kind of like people who are just like trying to solve a puzzle. And, you know, maybe everyone's in this to some degree, but people who are just trying to like break apart problems and go go deeper, and they always want to find, figure out a new answer to the thing, or they do it one way and they want to find another way to do it. It's almost like a skateboarder who's like, you do one trick and you're going to be doing the next one. Like you finish the first one and it's like, oh sick, I landed this trick. And then you're going to be like, before mm-hmm. you know it, you're already trying to do another one. And so, I think some people are like, yo, just like teach me how to do like a still life and I'm going to do a ton of still lifes, you know? And maybe, or a portrait, they want to be able to paint a portrait and they're going to be like a professional portrait painter and they're going to be like kick ass at that. And then maybe there's also just like an insatiable, like we're going to figure out a new thing every time, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know how to put it, but yeah, that's my current assessment anyway, which is still developing. So if you talk to me in a couple of years, maybe I'll be like, yo, what was I thinking? You know,
well, what do you think attracted, besides the ceiling of skills, you know, you were saying that basically you hit a ceiling and so you wanted to be able to challenge that. But is there, what are the philosophical or spiritual repercussions to pursuing something in this way? You know, obviously it's more of a traditional mode. It's very grounded in light and the understanding of light. Sure. It's very mundane in the sense that it's depicting everyday visual reality. And so I assume it changes you, you know, to enter into this process every day. Surely it has some kind of impact on your life and your psyche.
Well, you know, I think this is what I would say about that is that if you look at a place like that at like face value, it would be, oh, we're drawing like a plaster cast, which is like, there's this tradition of drawing like casts from antiquity. So like Greek and Roman cast sculpture, basically, or we're drawing a portrait and that's what we're drawing. Or we're drawing a figure. We're learning like proportions and like anatomy and all this stuff. And it's kind of like a literal thing. Like, you went there to learn how to draw a figure and now you can draw a figure, right? Mm-hmm. But the underlying thing is really learning problem solving, and like it's almost like the art of learning how to learn. And so if you're asking like how did it change me, I think the biggest way is just learning how to learn something at a deep level. And I think you can kind of apply that how you want to, or it's like, if you could learn one thing really deeply, you could learn another thing deeply. And so I would say, you're asking about the graffiti stuff earlier. Mm-hmm. And I would say even within that, like the process of going through this like oil painting journey has made me get better at the journey with like spray painting and stuff, just because I've had to ask these questions. Well, like, well, why did I do it this? Or like, why did I do it this way? Or, oh, I saw this person do that. That was wild. I'm like trying to figure out, well, how did they capture like the proportions, or how did they get the character of the person into a portrait? But then I'm also looking at like some piece that someone painted and I'm like, well, I see like all this stuff happening. What do I have to do to like get a little bit of that sauce in my piece, you know? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of it is kind of like being forced to kind of look in the mirror and kind of like assess where you're at and see how you can get better. So it's being comfortable with not being good at something and kind of embarking on like a long journey to fix that.
Well, no, it's true, because when you're up against tradition, you're up against everything preceding you. So
yeah,
like you said before, you have to be comfortable being compared to those individuals with similar goals. And in a sense, we'll say, with a sense of realism, because it doesn't seem like you have devotional goals in the sense of you don't make like Christian paintings or something. So that's one metric that doesn't seem present. I could be wrong. Obviously there's like vanitas elements to the work, right? These paintings that contemplate death,
for sure.
So that's a tradition you could easily be compared with, and that takes a certain sense of courage and objectivity, I think, too. Because you know you're going to be doing it for a while and people are going to be like, well, this is just horrible compared to what I'm, you know, what's appreciated as fine art.
You mean so from the past?
For instance, if you're Pollock, Jackson Pollock,
Yeah.
I mean, first off, I don't care about Jackson Pollock, but second off, what, there's nothing to really compare it to. You can compare the innovation of the paintings, the originality. So you look at the process and you say, oh, wow, he stood over it. It's on the ground. He's dripping it. This is different.
Yeah.
So we know it's different. We know it's idiosyncratic. But we ultimately don't really have clear metrics to judge it by. I mean, I think it can be judged objectively, but not everyone would be comfortable doing so.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I think if you look at like modernism, basically created the narrative that like the new artists must kind of like dismantle whatever's been done before and come up with something new. Like you're saying, oh, well, no one's ever painted on the ground before.
Yes.
And then if you look at the older artists, it's more like they're, this is really the difference between like tradition and like, you know, like, I hate saying it, but like avant-garde or something, where like if you look at like old styles, I think the component of time kind of changes things, where like it's hard for people to get their mind around like a few years of doing something, let alone like lifetime or like thousands of years, where like you think of like Roman sculpture or like Egyptian art, these are almost like state styles where there is a lot less individuality. It's like for 3,000 years, they did almost the same thing. And sure, there's differences where you can say century by century, like, oh, this is a Roman bust from the 3rd century, and this is one from the 5th century. And here's the difference, you know. But like I saw something about like the cave paintings, and in like, you know, like Lascaux or something. And like some of those caves were like visited for like 1,000 years. And they're like those little doodles that we all see are like the accumulation of like 1,000 years or something. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think it's hard to get your mind around that amount of time, but
it is, and the compression of knowledge, and that's what I mean. Like Pollock isn't on the shoulders of giants, and I think it shows. He's simply on his own little.
Damn! Shots fired.
I'll fire all day. Respect. I have respect for any of these people. You know, I respect artists and the pursuit, but I don't play around with certain I don't put on the pretense that I think Pollock is life-changing. I don't think he is. I think if someone tells me he is, I have suspicion. And then there's painters where I'm like, oh, I can understand, or writers or novelists.
Yeah.
And I don't have to squint my eyes at them. I say, well, of course, you know, whatever, Dostoevsky or something, or someone who's like unparalleled in their craft and in their execution. But when you apply this lens of deep suspicion to craft, which has been an art school play for decades now, one, because you can just milk the students who suck money-wise because they have no objective metric by judging their own horrible work.
Oh, man, that's rough.
It's true, though. Because when you actually have an apprentice system, there's kind of an initiation and there's a brutality of objectivity where you can say, no, this is not what I asked you to do. This is not moving towards the goal we're all seeking.
Yeah.
But if we're all on our own little islands making what we feel, then yeah, you can convince a kid who barely shows up to class and makes their work in the hour before that they deserve a diploma. But anyway, I'm kind of spiraling out of control. But
yeah,
I'm kind of just curious about, like I was saying before, the repercussions of these different pursuits. Like, I think when you pursue as an island, when you pursue on these metrics that only exist within you, I think it's a very isolating and depressing pursuit. But I think connecting with craft, connecting with even in woodworking or anything, you have this, it's a type of comfort that comes from this connectivity to the ages of, you know, thousands of humans, more than that, over, like you said, thousands of years pursuing a similar thing. And
yeah,
that is an underrated feeling, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I have a couple different thoughts from there. Like,
go ahead.
On one hand, I think like the kind of like the notion of like isolated art practice versus like working in a group or like more collaboratively, I think that is something that maybe people don't think about enough, or definitely I think I didn't think about it enough. And then I think when you I think certain pursuits like painting can be very isolating sometimes, where it's like, I think something like sculpture, mm-hmm. sculpture is almost like inherently collaborative. Cause like, let's say you're going to like cast something in bronze, like you're just going to have to work together with other people. And I think there's something super beautiful about collaborative processes. So,
absolutely. Oh, I mean, I was just ranting about modernism in contrast to, it isn't clear in contrast to what, because it's not like I'm saying the Renaissance is the highest period of art, but
yeah.
I am suggesting that when cultures get together, like you said, even Egyptian, and there is some cohesion to the pursuit, that it yields a result that is baffling, actually, to the modern eye. And I think most of the times people don't even, they see a temple or a church, they view it as like another product, like it came out of a factory, or it's like an amusement park. And the idea that humans made these things by hand with the accompaniment of tools, of course, is almost impossible to comprehend, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not like a specialist in like architecture or something, but even if you think about architecture, like modern architecture, it's like, I think the vision of the architect, like almost like reinventing what a building could be, or like coming up with new principles for what a building could be. Whereas if you look at like older architecture, it's like there's a certain type of style that they're conforming to, and they're playing with the different kind of like components of that to make like a really like a more harmonious type of building. And so there's like a parallel with just like the way spaces are designed, for sure. But yeah, I remember what I was going to say about earlier though, which is that I sometimes wonder like if there's like a way that you can kind of like, I guess, judge like quality or value of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I kind of wonder like, is there like a set of, like we're talking about, like, is it just like anything goes? And it's like what you're saying, like everyone's making something on an island and we're like, well, everything's valid. Like you can do whatever you want and it'll be amazing or something. Or are there like a set of standards to view something by? And I'm a little bit on the fence about it, because like on one hand, like I definitely would say, oh, like certain things are like exquisitely crafted. And it's like I think of like a Rembrandt portrait, and there's like something about it that's like really incredible. But then on the other hand, I sort of believe in like being able to go through life and just like pay attention to what you respond to. And like, I don't know, if you think about like bands or something, like listen to the music that you like. You don't have to listen to the music that someone else told you to listen to. You know, you be able to kind of like have your own ear and be like, oh, this is sick to me, so that's what I like, you know. Mm-hmm. More so than like, well, this is what's considered good, this is what we have to all celebrate, you know.
I think that, or
two things at once.
Exactly. It sits in between, and it has to, because if someone was rigidly adhering to tradition and technique, they would be unremarkable and history would make no note of them. But it's those who do adhere to that while knowing how to break the rules that tend to be revered. And for good reason. I don't think it's arbitrary. I think there's an incredible wealth of objectivity to art, and we can start with the fact that we're all human, and that has its limitations and that has its proclivities. So, you know, for me, that's after you really think about the power of narrative and storytelling, it isn't really that big of a mystery to me why the majority of art from the beginning of time up until modernism, in some sense, was concerned with depicting a story, whether it's the cave paintings or Christian art or whatever, Eastern art. At the core, there's a recognition of the fundamental that, one, we're human, and through time and through these stories, that's how we connect. So when we brazenly reject all of that and decide that a painting can just be one color, I think there are repercussions, and I think those repercussions are this work will not be relevant in 200 years, 100 years, even maybe 50 Ooh. Years. I don't
That's
think.
That's an interesting point. Yeah.
Yeah. I just,
you want to know my,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, rip.
Oh, you want to hear my little like breakthrough in like understanding modernism sure. was, I was in Barcelona in 2019, like right before the pandemic, because I had got a painting and a show that was out there at this place called the Meme Museum. It's like mm-hmm. museum, whatever. But it just so happens that it's right down the street from the Picasso Museum. And I'm not a huge fan of Picasso, but I was like, it's right here. I have to go. So I went to Picasso Museum, was seeing kind of his trajectory. And I think a couple of points, like, people will say, oh, like he could draw, but then he like chose not to draw and all this stuff. Mm-hmm, and, mm-hmm. you know, like the figure drawings that he did weren't really spectacular. It was more just like the stuff that people did at that time. So they're just kind of like these charcoal figure sketches, like decent proportions. And like, okay, like that's what was being taught. He did a couple of nice portraits, I guess. But from there, I think he was sort of just part of the time, I guess, like milieu that he was living in or whatever. Mm-hmm. But what I realized at a certain point was that he intentionally created a theoretical art, and then people imitated it as an aesthetic art, because he had this whole thing about, I guess he came from, I guess, like a sort of intellectual family, and he was more closely associated with like writers than with artists. Mm-hmm. And so apparently like his family had like a reading time in the day, and everyone would like sit and read a book, and they probably had like discussions and all this stuff. And so he did this like a master copy or like dissection of Velázquez's painting Las Meninas. And there was a quote from him where he said, "A master of copying paintings would hate what I've done here, because he intentionally like dismantled it and broke it apart." And I can't remember the exact quote, but he basically said he's creating a theoretical art of like what art could be by like shattering the planes and simplifying the colors and all this stuff. But then I think what happened is everyone saw what he did, and maybe they didn't realize it was like this theoretical statement of like what art could be. And then they just copied the aesthetic of it. So, and that was what then became like propagated further.
That's an interesting analysis, and I love Picasso, so I'll take a step back and say, like we said about monoliths before, modernism is very complex, but there are aspects of it that are unifying, and a lot of those aspects are trying to dismantle certain elements of prior traditions, obviously, like Picasso. Marcel Duchamp is the same problem. It's like he existed, he was great because he was playing around with these theoretical and conceptual things, but then all these artists imitated him and became like the worst, most cynical artists, and it kind of went nowhere, and it continues to go nowhere. But that's a funny way of looking at Picasso, and I think that makes a lot of sense to me. But I also like someone who's not just saying, oh, he was like had reached Renaissance level life study drawing skills and then abandon that. I like to hear that you can see the, I mean, I think at 15 he was very good, but like you're saying, it's not like he had done the thing and then he was finished with that, so he moved on to the next.
Kind of a couple of things, like as I'm saying it, I'm realizing this, the idea of creating like a theoretical art or like redefining what art could be, that's kind of a thing that certain people like picked up and like ran with that. And they're like still trying to like redefine what art could be. But then on the other hand, I think it like at each step or like as like a new version of what art could be is developed by kind of the theoretical people, then a lot of other people will like imitate the aesthetic of it without maybe connecting to the theory.
Of course. Yeah. No, that makes sense to me. And it speaks to, I think, the manner by which you seek to enter the viewer. So, obviously that plays to the mind more. There's a kind of meta referential aspect to it. But you can enter through their heart. You can enter through their eyes. you could do it all at once if you're a master, probably. And I think that's what frustrates me sometimes, is a lot of paintings in the modernist mode are kind of only doing one thing, and they're doing one thing that used to happen inside of a great painting along with all the other stuff. And so it's like isolating, like, oh, we're going to study color. But it's like, well, there's great paintings that already did that and actually delivered on every other front at the same time. So I don't need Rothko to break down color swatches for me when there's there's a multitude of paintings that understand color. Like, I think you like Wyeth, right? I feel like somewhere.
Yeah, Wyeth is awesome. Yeah, yeah.
Or any of the Golden Age illustrators are actually, I don't know if you'd technically be in that group, but that whole school, Brandywine River School.
Yeah, I love those.
Their understanding of color is obscene, especially when you see it in person.
Yeah.
But is there like a person, like, let's take the your favorite painter.
Oh my.
In the last 100 years. Just not, no one's holding it to you.
Oh no. Favorite painter in the last 100 years.
Or somebody you like. I'm just curious because, you know, for me, I used to talk a lot of shit on realist painting. And I think I didn't. I didn't
tell me why. I want to hear some shit about realist painting.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Break it down.
All right, so I'm kind of like channeling myself 10 years ago. But I'm interested in symbols and iconography and like psychological spaces. That's why I like black and white. So I'm not seeking a visual representation of the world. Now, this is a great reduction to say that what you do is a visual representation of the world, and it's not fair. But I do think, you know, I grew frustrated with what I viewed as some limitations there. It's not that I was ever seeking it per se, but every sketchbook you get when you're 12 or 15 or whatever usually has some really bad attempt at like some schmaltzy realism. And and I'm attracted by flatness too. So and I might be emerging out of that. I think there's psychological repercussions to being attracted by that flatness, and I won't get into that now, but I think the attack is, okay, these are just technicians. They have no soul. They have nothing to express. But I think it's a straw man argument because that may be true, but that's true of any medium or approach to art. And there are certainly trappings to technique because it can be intoxicating. Yeah. But every good artist is balancing technique and expression. So that's just true of anything. And I think part of me, if I had to be real about it, is there is a intimidating component to people who can achieve certain technical heights. And you don't want to, it's like being a little dweeb in high school or nerd and looking at the jocks and being like, no, they're not objectively more attractive than I am, biologically speaking. This is just, you know, this is all nonsense. But meanwhile, you come to find, no, it's actually, there's like pretty good biological reasons why it's true. And so you reject a kind of obvious fact because it intimidates you. And I think like I would venture to guess you have far more technical ability than I have because of the nature in which I've explored drawing. And I have to be comfortable with that, you know?
I mean, there's a lot of different ways to do things, but this is sounds like it's switching the subject, but it's not. But have you ever seen the movie Wild Style?
The graffiti film? Is that a graffiti film? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Or no, wait, Wild Style. No,
it's called Style Wars.
Style Wars. Style Wars. Yeah. Have you seen Style Wars?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. Okay. So do you know Cap?
It's been a long time since I've seen it, and I don't care about graffiti at all, but go on.
I'm sorry. Okay. Well, anyway, so there was like this one crew of people who are all like the style masters, and they're like coming up with their crazy styles, like Dondi and people like that, and Scheme, who have like all the skills. And there's this guy Cap who just is like going to pop up, and he's just like, his thing was, he's just going over everybody. So whatever they do, he's going to destroy it.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
And I'm going to quote one of my friends here. So shout out M27. I was hanging out with him a little bit ago, and he's a super dope DJ and artist. And he was like, why does everyone like Cap so much? Cause everyone likes Cap. And he's like, well, the reason everyone likes Cap is because 99% of the world, or 95% of the world, is Cap. You know, most people aren't Dondi. There's only one Dondi. There's like, but you feel like you can be Cap, you know? And I think there's a little bit of that in what you're saying.
Oh yeah, that's the spirit of Satan, straight up. It's just like,
is it?
yeah. It's well, in the sense of the antagonist, that's so funny. In the sense of the inability to acknowledge something higher than you, and the desire to destroy that which you can't do.
That's you wild. Know. That's interesting. Yeah. The thing is, though, for me, I'm like constantly overwhelmed by like how many amazing artists there are, and just like how much cool stuff is happening. Like, I think people don't stop and think about it enough, but like, I sort of feel like we're in this like golden age of creativity, and it, like, if you go online and see what's happening, it's just so many super talented people. So like, I find it hard, like it would be hard to be like, yo, I'm at the pinnacle or something. It's like, there's so many people who are doing amazing stuff.
You're not, I don't mean to suggest you're at the pinnacle of the,
I'm not saying you are, but I mean like,
technically I can say comfortably, technically, but, we can speak narrowly, like there's painting wise, the things you could do with paint or a pencil or whatever, is way beyond what I could do. And I could probably show you what I do technically in, I mean, it might just require a pen. So I think that,
well, hey man, I don't know how important that or the distinction is, but I mean, it's just like, there's a lot of different ways to make stuff. But I mean, I think something that I think about related to this is, going back a couple of steps also, mm-hmm. is kind of like what artwork or music or just things in life do I respond to, mm-hmm. and just trying to like really pay attention to that. And it kind of goes back to this sort of like kind of oil painting crew that I'm talking about, and also just this sense of like, is like skill intimidating, or like should you even pursue skill, or like should you just like pick your favorite colors, or like think of like Yayo Kusama, sorry if I said her name wrong, but like she's like a extreme example of like modernism, right? I would say, and
sure.
kind of reinventing like what art could be, like these like infinity rooms and polka dots and like painting and on the standing on walking around painting with the broom and all this stuff. But like, I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm like mad at that. Like, I think it's really cool. Like, I haven't actually been to the infinity room, but it's like, it's pretty sick that that exists.
Yeah, I think I draw a clear distinction between personal opinion and what I consider objective metrics. So,
sure.
So like, because first off, I'm drawn to a lot of, like, I like Picasso a lot. I like a lot of modern art. Mm-hmm. I like a lot of work that wouldn't fall into this traditional mode at all. In fact, I probably prefer it, but I also acknowledge, I can acknowledge, for instance, like I could listen to a punk band that's all power chords and I can like it, but then I can listen to certain classical music and be like, well, this is objectively a higher mode of expression. And I'm comfortable with that distinction, because I think articulation is a sign of advancement. And, you know, what I'm saying is your craft, your technique allows for a lot of articulation that I think is impressive.
That's interesting.
I'm speaking from an evolutionary perspective, right? Like, you have amoebas, they're not articulated. You end up at humans, they are massively articulated. They're almost like cities to the level of complexity. And you can appreciate amoebas, they're cool. But there's a hierarchy here of certain values. And, you know, as much as we wished, like, it's like I watched cartoons and read comic books. So that's the fertile soil for where I'm coming from. And I think one has to acknowledge that, right? Like, I can't become a Renaissance apprentice suddenly. I don't think that's possible. I don't live in a monoculture that where they're seeking certain heights, and I'm not even necessarily interested in it. But I can be comfortable with reverence and respect towards what happened there, and at the same time even be like, well, and I'm never going to reach those heights. Like, those are heights that I'm never going to get, you know? Like, we are atomized in this current world as individuals, and it gives us certain quote unquote freedoms, but it also severely limits our ability to work together to make what I would suggest are beautiful structures and beautiful works of art.
That's a lot.
Yeah, I think I'm getting into these questions, these inquiries and questions. Because I think what you're pursuing begs a certain question. I think it's interestingly unique in its lack of uniqueness, in the sense that it's almost obvious, you know, again, to like most like parents or something, they'd be like, well, that's what art looks like right there.
That's what I was saying earlier.
So I think there's implications to the pursuit, and I know you're kind of in the beginning stages in some sense, because I'm sure I can assume you'll pursue this path for decades, right? Like, do you feel like you've found the mode?
It's interesting. Yeah. I'm on the quest, you know. I think I'm definitely like, in a lot of ways, it's like, life is funny, you know, because I think there's different stages in life, and there's different realities of like kind of some of these like lofty ideas we're talking about, and then just like the like literal reality of life, and like, what are you going to do with this like existence we're here for, you know? But as far as like my journey, I think it's sort of like, I feel like I'm at the beginning in a lot of ways, even though it's been kind of a long road to get here. But I definitely, I think I have a sort of general vision of what I'm trying to do. And I think the question is really like, how do we kind of like activate the vision? And, I think that's a thing just as far as like trying to kind of embark on this sort of like, for lack of a better way of putting it, like art path or creative path with your life. I think a huge part of it is kind of materializing what could be sort of like abstract impulses or kind of visions. So as far as that goes, I definitely have a lot that I'm kind of still kind of putting the pieces together of, but I think that kind of makes it fun though, because if I was like, no, I like totally figured it out, this is what I'm going to like do forever, I think that would be sort of annoying. I think in terms of just like existing in the world, and you think about like selling stuff or like kind of like making like a style of painting or this or that, or like having a career, I think there's definitely like a push to kind of like land on a thing that you're gonna like do with your kind of career or something. And so it's definitely a balancing act of like, okay, I need to like kind of, on one hand I'm like, okay, I have this sort of like pursuit to like get better at drawing. I'm not gonna project like I can think in advance. I'll just tell you like right now what I'm working on is I'm kind of balancing, I want to like make work and show it, and then also have and kind of like exist in the world, and then at the same time maybe I have like things I'm still working on, or like, oh, I'm trying to I'm trying to get better at portraiture and like exploring drawing, and like what can I do with sort of drawing language and stuff like that. So I think in order to be successful, you kind of have to be able to pivot between a few different things. So there's kind of like lofty ideas, there's maybe like life goals, and then there's like, you know, like right now I need to do X, Y, or Z to kind of keep it moving.
But I feel like we've been spiraling around the work itself in some ways, because I think the work speaks for itself. That's probably why. But one question I have is, all of this technical skill is being accrued and acquired, but to what end? Like, what do you, for instance, I don't think it's appropriate to say, what are you trying to say with the work? Because that's really, but in some ways that's my question. Like, what do you think? Because I see you're working in kind of two modes, at least from what I'm seeing, where it's like, there's some more inventive stuff where it's playing around with tradition. And then there's some stuff that feels pretty in line with tradition, where it might be just like fruit or skulls. So there is there's flashes of both, at least these two different directions. Is there one you want to go towards? Is there things you're cautious about dragging in there? Like for instance, if you were to use these skills to depict like pop art stuff, like Coca-Cola cans, this is a move. This is a move that I personally find off-putting. Like this kind of like, ooh, tradition meets the most low garish aspects of modern culture. Look at how I'm using this fancy traditional technique to depict a bag of chips. I'm curious,
really nice painting of an iPhone or something.
Yeah. Like I'm curious when you're sitting down to make these decisions, because your process and your medium already puts you in a certain frame more than usual, like even writing oil on canvas or whatever. So what do you think, what's going on? What are you trying to do? What are you not trying to do?
Oh man.
It's a tough one, but I mean,
maybe I'm just intuitively trying to think how to articulate it, but
maybe you're exploring it intuitively, but I think it's worth trying to flesh out a little bit.
Like what am I trying to accomplish, or like how did I, or why did I go down this path of like realism or something?
Well, I think so. There's schooling in the sense of like you've been like life drawing, right? I don't think it's about what you're trying to express. It's about, oh sure, you're trying to imbue the figure with life while visually depicting it correctly. But when you're thinking about your work, quote unquote, what do you think that identity is? I don't want to say the brand, because that's what you're trying to avoid, but in a sense, it's a reality we have to face, is like, are you seeking singular expression? Because in contrast, again, to like devotional art, which would be more in the worship of God, like that's where your technique is being used. I imagine you're still interested in the individual's pursuit, the individual expression, et cetera, of art itself.
I mean, I think with what I'm doing right now, it's, or kind of where I'm taking it, is sort of this mix between like looking at the past and kind of like ancient subject matter. I started kind of, as I was kind of studying and figuring out like what I was going to do, I started trying to think about like what's the common theme here in a lot of the artwork that I like. And so I put, honestly, during the pandemic, I like put together like a online class that I was teaching to a few random people and a few of my friends who took the class. And it was kind of this funny little like crash course in like oil painting and art, but I came up with this idea of like ancient subject matter. And so I was trying to understand like, what are the common themes if you look at like all of art? And so like you could have as like depictions of fruit, or like one that maybe one I'll talk about is like the feast. I think like the feast is like a theme that like repeats a lot of times throughout various things, whether you see it pop up in movies and just in some of the kind of the shot sequences and film, cinema, all that, blah, blah, blah. Even an advertisement, like I'll be in the subway and I see some like advertisement and I'm like, there it is. And so I sort of have started just like tracking subject matter in some way and just trying to pay attention to like what things reappear. And I think there's something that people do within painting that kind of attaches them to history in some way, which is to kind of like remix the previous works, where they're kind of like part of the conversation because they're joining the conversation in some way. And so if you're, I guess, what am I trying to do? How would I put it?
Well, there's many conversations occurring in painting, you know? And so again, there's like, it's a very specific thing what you do, and it puts you in a specific conversation unless you're trying to subvert that thing, but that's still the same frame. That's still the same conversation. You're just saying no.
What do you mean by that? Are you saying like by painting realistically, it puts you in like a certain kind of like geographical coordinates within the art world kind of, is that what you mean?
I think by pursuing oil painting and doing it in a technical way, Yeah. You're already in a, you're already within a tradition, already in a conversation that, for instance, it's like you're not in Japanese woodblock printing world. Oh. You're not in oceanic art. You're not in X, Y, or Z. You're
oceanic art's pretty cool.
No, it's all, that's all beautiful. I love all that work. But you're just not in that conversation per se.
Oh, and, yeah. You know what I think about sometimes is like, how much control do you have over like what conversation you, you're part of? Or are you just kind of like, you are who you are type of thing? Like I sometimes, I think something I've been realizing like as I get older is that like I can be a fan of a lot of stuff without trying to like copy it or do it per se. I can be like, yo, that's sick that someone did that. And but exactly. I do like I do this, you know? And so like I'm a
that's a very mature realization. It's very mature, you know, realization, yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. I mean,
no, no, it is. I had it. It's like obviously you have limitations, right? You like say you watch a Michael Jordan highlight, you're 35 years old. You're not like, oh man, I want to be a basketball player. I'm going to go be a, like you can yeah, separate these things. But so let's try and look, it might not be a thing that's at the forefront yet, but I think it's a worthy analysis of like.
Yeah, but I could get a little more like specific about what you're saying. So basically like what you kind of were, you did kind of pick up on what I've been kind of considering, which is some of the stuff is like pretty straightforward. Like the fruit on the table is pretty straightforward. And some of the other stuff are kind of my first kind of attempts to say, okay, I'm going to like mix it up and get a little more crazy here. And I think I'm sort of pushing my paintings towards like a little more towards like magic and fantasy. I think that's been my goal. I think I think there's this kind of funny line to walk though, where like there's a whole category of like fantasy art that's like very illustrative and like Magic the Gathering, which is like fucking awesome. Like I'm a fan of some of the artists, a lot of the artists that do that type of stuff. But I think there's this kind of like kind of narrow path to kind of, it's almost to kind of like, or something that I'm trying to do is kind of like dip my toe in a little bit of that, but I'm not trying to be like a fantasy art painter. It's more like take existing in this sort of like middle ground. I think what am I trying to say? I think there's an overlap. There's an overlap if you look at, there's an overlap if you look at old art and then with, the ancient and kind of fantasy and even like future. And you kind of hit on it in saying that like there'll be some masterpiece from the past where someone is then like Rothko has said, I'm going to investigate like color space. And they just pick one element out of this whole thing and just like hyper focus on that. I think the question for me is, can there be some sort of specific, like, I don't know, I almost want to say like alchemy to like access this point where it's like almost real, but it's clearly something like otherworldly. Mm. I think that the best moments of old art are hitting that. And probably maybe across time, a lot of the things that I'm most interested in are hitting this like kind of like weird out of time thing. And I think that's what I'm kind of going for. And, you know, it might be, it's almost like shooting for a target that's not there to try to do something like that. But, yeah, but I mean, like in a literal sense, like I have like a stack of like thumbnails and stuff where I'm like planning out like what I'm gonna do, but I think there's something like kind of convenient about, oh, I'm gonna paint the fruit, you know, because it's right here. It's a little bit easier because it's so literal. I think it takes,
I could see that being tempting, you know, like the pleasure of painting and I don't know, a landscape or a fruit or letting those things speak for themselves, which is fine. I think if that's one's pursuit, but it seems to me that looking at your work that there is like what you're describing, this tension at the moment where you're trying to find how you can play with that almost like magic realism, like this way that you can imbue this with
I think Andrew Wyeth is a really fun person to look at for this also. Sure. just in the sense of like how people view it, because there's one of my favorite art books is actually a book about Andrew Wyeth called The Spoken Self-Portrait, and it's like from like 300 hours of interviews with him and kind of his community and put together into this book. And one thing he talks about is how people will view him as like American nostalgia, because he's like painting barns and sort of like countryside scenes. And I think he felt like that was, he says in the book, he felt like that was kind of missing the point a little bit, because for him, it wasn't about nostalgia and America and American farm imagery. It was really like his particular life, which was like the magic of like life and like his family and his grandparents and like Halloween and like just hitting this sort of like chord with that. So he could be painting something literal and he's not thinking about the literal. And that's where I think the reality kind of goes into this sort of more like metaphorical abstract space, even to the point where you could be drawing a person, but it's like the subject of the painting isn't really the person.
Yeah, I think Wyeth is a great example, and maybe that's the best answer to the question, is just pointing at an artist that is kind of the North Star in that moment. And Wyeth does something really difficult, which is be respected as an illustrator by fine art institutions. This is incredibly rare. You know, the fact that Christina's world would be as relevant as it is, but also that at least with the school I went to, UArts for Illustration, he was revered. Mm-hmm. As an illustrator. And so he clearly could toe these lines in a really interesting way. But yeah, that makes sense to me. Like, he seems like a good model.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, he's not the only one, but definitely I think the concept of kind of like the hidden like mystery and magic and like simple things, I think that's pretty fascinating. So I guess I like to like collect interesting items. So I think like I never set out to say, oh, I'm going to be a still life painter. And I don't even really like it if people call me a still life painter, although it's okay if you do. But I guess I like kind of unique items. So like I found this like wine decanter at a thrift mm-hmm. store. It was like a hand glass blown wine decanter it was like $4, but it's like really sick. There's only one of one, you know, and like I like stuff like that. I'm going to do a painting. Oh, I saw like these really wild like Dutch paintings, and oh, they're putting these glasses. Oh, well, I need to get a glass like that. Well, how could you get a glass like that? Oh, well, I found this like hand blown glass one, mm-hmm. you know, and it just turns into this like quest. And so then I think the part where I'm going through a reflective period, because then I'm like, oh, like now that I did this thing, I had my reason for doing it. But then I'm like, someone's looking at this and like, oh geez, it's just like a table full of fruit. Like, what's going on with that? And then I'm like, oh yeah, like, did I really want to paint a table full of fruit, or did I have something else to say, you know? And so I don't know, I guess it could seem like kind of like ridiculous to like go through this whole little like thought process here in this format. But you know, if anyone's curious, probably there's a lot of people who do like creative things who might listen to your podcast or whatever. And I guess I feel like maybe that's like what the art process is to go through these kind of like different waves of like understanding and like trying something and like considering it again. It's almost like, imagine if you had to be like, if you had to catch a fish and you hadn't learned how to fish before, you're going to have to like, it's like reinventing the wheel in this funny way of like, you have to go figure out, how am I going to catch the fucking fish? You know?
Mm-hmm. There's different kinds of fish too.
Yeah, there's different kinds of fish. Yeah, if you're used to like going fishing in a trout stream and you end up in the ocean, it's like not going to work as well.
You know, one thing I should note is that I was just wrong. N.C. Wyeth is who I'm thinking of, who's an actual illustrator. Andrew Wyeth never illustrated, and that's why
I almost corrected him, but then I didn't feel like going in on it. Yeah, his dad was an illustrator, and then he was a fine artist.
Yeah, that makes more sense. I mix them up.
Yeah, his dad's super awesome too, though.
He's amazing. But you should correct me next time.
I'm sorry.
Next time I'm talking Wyeth and I'm out of pocket.
Yeah, don't mess up, man. Keeping track.
Well, I think we had a good talk.
Yeah.
It was a good time. And you got any shows coming up? I don't know.
Oh, man. Okay.
You got any shows coming up?
Any shows? Not at the moment. I'm sort of like in between things.
And what about this class? Are you still teaching this class?
Teaching this class. Yeah, I'm teaching figure painting right now in the core program at Grand Central Atelier, actually.
But also you had mentioned some kind of smaller class, like beginning oil painting.
Oh, yeah, class. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I did that like an online class. Yeah, it was actually super fun. I've thought about bringing it back and doing like another edition. That one was online because it was like in the pandemic and everyone's at home. I'm trying to figure out if I should do it online or in person or what. I did a several day workshop in LA last year at this place called Klein Academy, which is a super cool little school out in LA. And that was really fun to kind of get to travel out there and kind of share some of my like ideas from New York and stuff with the people there. And I'm hoping to do more stuff like that and see where I can go as far as that goes.
Right on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good talking to you. Good catching up.
Save the animals.
You want to do that?
Same as last words. Yeah, man. It makes me really sad that there's so many animal species going extinct.
Okay, save the animals.
Yep, that's what I have to say today.
Right on.
Yeah.
Well, have a good night.
Peace.
Bye.
Bye.
Music by Dori Bavarsky and Mingja Chen. Next up, we have illustrator Pete Gamlin. Have a great week.